Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And we have plenty more to get into with Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns reportedly being on the outs, certainly with the Antonio Brown and Tampa Bay Buccaneers saga that continues to roll on here with all the drama there. But let's head on the field because we are getting ready for Week 18 in the NFL, which is the new Week 17 in the NFL, which means we got to start to do what we do in bowl season. Try and gauge everyone's motivation heading into this final week of the season. How does that reflect in dollars and cents? I'm glad you asked. Doug Kazarian, the host of the ESPN Daily Wager, joins us on the Goodyear Hotline with you for every mile on the road to greatness. Goodyear, more driven. And Doug, let's start with that one. Going into the final weekend of the NFL season here, a lot of teams in different positions, playoff and otherwise here. So how do you go about kind of looking at this slate here and figuring out what's safe enough to actually go and put some cash behind?
You know, it's definitely a different era right now with COVID, and then obviously week 18/17 from previous years, like you mentioned, and made the comparison to bowl season. Odds makers hate it. In a perfect world, odds makers would have everyone playing neutral field, and it would just be a simple math equation to figure out the point spread. But there's so many moving parts, so many news surfacing, like Joe Burrow reporting it. According to Joe Burrow not playing this weekend. So just anything can surface up. People pounce, especially with the apps and technology. It's not like you run to the counter in a sports book necessarily. You can just get down in about 5 to 8 seconds. So odds makers have to stay on their toes. As on the other side of the counter for a better, it's really difficult. There's definitely times like last week I had the Vikings +7. I thought that was a good number. I thought it would dip below 7. Well, what happens? Kirk Cousins, COVID protocol. The line jumps up to 13.5, and that +7 is a dead ticket. So it can be frustrating at times. Sometimes you catch a break the other way, not always, but it's definitely like a juggling act, and it's certainly newer this year with the COVID component, but everything's compounded week 18, like you alluded to.
Doug, I spent 8 of my 11 years in the NFL and the NFC East, so I figured that's a good place to start with the Dallas Cowboys on the road against the Philadelphia Eagles. The Cowboys are laying 7 points, and the over-under is 43. What do you like about that game? Dak Prescott and all the starters for the Cowboys seem like they're poised to play. How do you like that game? How do you like that line? Which side do you favor?
Yeah, it was 7 for a few days, Canty, and then obviously the news surfaced with Dallas maybe having some health issues. That line got bet down to 5.5. So sometimes it's bets, sometimes it's just the market moving with news. So it's a little bit of both today. I lean to the Eagles. Look, last year we got implemented, there's only one bye in each conference. Green Bay and the NFC this year has locked it up. So while teams are going to play for seeding and want to do better, they're going to be more focused on rest and all that, because in many ways there may not be a difference between the 2 and the 3 seed. Yes, there would be a home field in the second round, but it's more issue. So there's sharp money came in on the Eagles. I like Philly too, even though Dallas dominated the earlier meeting that was a Monday Night Football game at Jerry Jones's place. But I would take the points just because we don't know who's exactly going to take the field on Sunday. We kind of know, we think we know, but if these reports develop, so the safer play, if you had to play today, would definitely be the Eagles plus the points.
Canty and Golic Jr. here talking to Doug Kazarian on the Goodyear Hotline. Doug, let's move on. You mentioned Joe Burrow reporting that Joe Burrow would not be playing in the upcoming game for the Cincinnati Bengals. They've got the Cleveland Browns team that's also going to be without its starting quarterback in Baker Mayfield here. What do you like in this one?
You know, sometimes you have to play amateur psychologist, right? So you have the Browns that were 3-point home dogs because the Bengals got to keep rolling, right? They clinched the division, they're in the playoffs, but now it's about seeding. But then Burrow's out, Mixon's out as well, and the Browns without Mayfield are about a 6-point home favorite. So you're scratching your head. So interesting line movement on that front for sure. I would take the Browns if I had to. I think the Bengals are going to have 1 foot out the door in this game just to try to get out of the dog pound without any injury. Now the Browns, as we saw on Monday night, may not play Chubb the entire game, but I think over the course of 4 quarters, and how much of a drop-off is it from Mayfield, who's not 100%, to Keenum? I don't think much of one. So I would lay the 6 with the Browns just because we expect the Bengals to kind of have a preseason unit out there by the second half.
Doug, the Green Bay Packers already got the number 1 seed in the NFC wrapped up with that first round bye. They finish up their regular season on the road in Detroit. The number's 3.5 in favor of Green Bay. Who do you like in this matchup?
You know, this is a fascinating situation because Rodgers, knowing that they have a bye looming, they don't want to go like essentially, you know, 19 days without playing an official game. The rust is a certain an issue. We saw that over the course of the years, maybe, namely with Tony Dungy's Colts team that just sat week 17 and would be so rusty. Now, they're not going to go to Cabo like Witten and Romo did that one bye week, but I like the fact that they're at least going to start the game. What I find interesting is there's no first half lines posted right now. Usually every NFL game has a first half line posted by Thursday afternoon. This week, all the first half lines are posted except Green Bay, because there's expectation that Green Bay may only play Rodgers a quarter and a half. So, like you said, it's a 3.5-point game spread, but we may see a similar scenario that we see in the preseason where a first half line is actually higher, like maybe 6, because Rodgers is expected to play, and then they go to Jordan Love in the second half. I don't expect Rodgers to play the entire game, but I can see him getting a few series, maybe even entire half. So I'm going to wait till that first half line comes out. Maybe they don't have information. Maybe you can beat the odds makers. A little bit of a guessing game. But I'm looking at the Packers' first half because I definitely want to bet when Rodgers is in the game and not when Jordan Love is.
Doug, you had to bring up Cabo, though? I mean, that still hurts me to this day, man. You're talking about my quarterback.
I know.
I'm just saying. Painful memory. Go ahead, Gojo. I'm sorry. I didn't want to interrupt the interview, but I had to let Doug know how I was feeling.
And man, pain is the theme of the day around here. Or maybe I should say quarterback mystery is the theme of the day around here, because in the next game I want to look at, we got the Rams as 4.5-point favorites, and we've seen all week this kind of dance around who's going to be under center for the 49ers. Saw some good things out of Trey Lance last week. Jimmy Garoppolo been back in practice on a limited basis. So how do we try and gauge this one, Doug?
Yeah, I like the Niners plus the 4.5, but it has to be with Garoppolo. I want no part of Trey Lance. I think he's just so green. Sure, the upside's there, but I want no part of him. He looked limited in his start earlier in the year against Arizona. Certainly looked limited against Houston. Can't believe they covered the double-digit spread there. But I think this Rams team, obviously their ceiling is really high. They can win the Super Bowl. I just don't see the consistency enough to lay 4.5 against a Shanahan-led Niners team that has been really good as a dog in the Shanahan tenure. Also, we've seen a wide range of this San Francisco team. I think their best ball has been lately over the past month. Obviously, they're a much better team with Kittle in the lineup. So I would grab the 4.5 with the Niners just because I don't really trust the Rams 100%, and the consistency is an issue for sure.
Doug, last but not least, the Chargers and the Raiders, the only one win and end scenario type of game, with the Chargers on the road as the favorites laying the 3 points against Vegas. How do you see this one? What's the play you like in this game?
You know, hats off to the Raiders for playing just great ball down the stretch with all the stuff that's gone on this season. They win in the dog pound. They won in Indy. Remarkable run. I just think the Chargers are the right side here. We obviously don't have to play amateur psychologists for this game. We know, as you mentioned, Candy, like this is winner you're in, all hands on deck. I just don't know if I trust the Raiders. Now, getting 3 points at home is significant. We talk about key numbers in the NFL point spread world because of the units of scoring of 3 and 7. So 3 is the most common margin of victory since the extra point moved back. 15.4% of NFL games entering this year have landed on the key number of 3. So you asking, I mean, a push is a, you know, obviously the Raiders side plus 3 counts as a push. But I just feel like the Chargers are just better. And I don't know what Waller's status is right now. The Chargers find a way to shoot themselves in the foot. They lost at Houston a couple weeks ago. Still the Chargers, even though they've changed the regime and the head coach. But I'll lay the 3 because I just don't trust the Raiders that much. The offense hasn't been putting up much points. I think their defense meets a real test in this Justin Herbert-led offense.
Make sure you guys check out Doug Kazarian and the rest of the crew on the Daily Wager. Doug, we always appreciate the time, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Good to be with you guys. Sorry to dish out the pain there, Canty. My apologies.
He says that, too, sitting there with the blue skies out in Vegas right behind him. True, Chris? I mean, it's just torture.
Yeah, it is, man. I mean, bringing up the 2007 divisional round game, I don't understand why we had to do that. I also don't understand why Jerry Jones had to print up tickets of the NFC Championship game and put them in our locker before that game, as if we needed any extra motivation going into that against a division opponent. I'm just saying. Don't know what Doug was thinking. Don't know what Jerry Jones was thinking. Both of them ended up hurting me, cutting me deeply. It hits me right between the nines, Gojo.
Chris, it's funny you bring up motivation tactics like that. We talked about the pain you described of me losing the national championship yesterday. Before that game, they brought all of us, the senior leadership, into a room and showed us mock-ups of the potential rings. They wanted us to be able to get a look at it and potentially get a head start on the ones we might have wanted. It was part motivational tactic, part logistics, and all pain seared into my brain for the rest of my life now.
Yeah, because you'll never forget what it could have looked like. You'll never forget what that ring could have been, even though you guys probably didn't have a chance of being able to beat Alabama and Nick Saban. I'm just- just saying.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Save when you bundle auto, home, or motorcycle insurance. God, those rings were cool. Visit Progressive.com. Coming up next, though, no rings this year for the Cleveland Browns. Could they maybe wind up with a new quarterback after this offseason? This may be a both sides issue for them. Next on ESPN Radio.
The College Football National Championship, presented by AT&T. The top-ranked Alabama Crimson Tide look to repeat as national champions when they face Kirby Smart's third-ranked Georgia Bulldogs. Coverage begins Monday at 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN. This is ESPN Radio.
Look now. We got a good old-fashioned player versus media war brewing in good old Cleveland. Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. There is just something beautiful about when it devolves fully and truly, Chris, because for anyone that's missed it here, it's been an interesting couple of days surrounding Baker Mayfield. Quarterback for the Cleveland Browns had a less than glamorous end of the season. Not going to play in week 18. It was announced by Kevin Stefanski, their head coach. He's having surgery on that non-throwing shoulder that's been bothering him all year long. We talked to our friend Aaron Goldhammer from ESPN Cleveland yesterday on the show, and he was pretty adamant that he believed that'll be the last we see of Baker Mayfield as a starter in Cleveland.
Well, I think Baker has played his last game as a Brown, so I don't This is about competition. I think that he's just toast. In part because I think the Browns are ready to move on, and in part because I think he wants a change of scenery, which I think you'll see that take place here over the course of the next couple of weeks. So then the Browns have to come up with a better answer. And my guess is, guys, it'll come from one of two places. Now, the draft thing is really dicey this year. The Browns could end up with a top 10 pick, but there are no top 10 quarterbacks in this draft, I don't think. And I think what's most likely is there's a second tier of guys that come available in the Derek Carr, Matt Ryan conversation. And I would bet on one of those guys being the starting quarterback of the Browns next year.
So, Chris, we had that on the show yesterday, and apparently Aaron Goldhammer must have known that Mary Kay Cabot was getting ready to drop the heat today, the reporter for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, who reported that not only does Baker Mayfield need to mend some fences inside that building, some relationships, but also that if he doesn't get assurances that things will change next season, he'll consider asking to be traded here. Baker quickly denied that on Twitter, but Chris, all this mess just kind of seems like where there's smoke, there has been a raging house fire for an entire season.
No doubt about it, Gojo, but there's a lesson to be learned in all of this. When a guy like Goldhammer says something, believe him. Like, it just feels like he was the first one ahead of this curve to kind of realize that the relationship between Baker and the Browns organization has devolved to the point now where they're questioning whether or not he's a part of not only their long-term future, but what they're going to do in the short term going into the 2020 offseason. There's a real possibility that Baker Mayfield finds himself starting for another NFL team other than the Cleveland Browns in 2022, and I just didn't imagine we would live in a world like that a week ago. That's how quickly this thing has kind of spiraled, and just based on what we've seen throughout the course of the season, whether it was the OBJ drama and teammates seemingly taking Beckham's side over Baker, Baker's comments about how they've got to get some things cleaned up in-house in order to get to some consistency about how they go about their business, Baker's wife questioning the toughness of his teammates and trying to big up her husband's toughness, dealing with the injury and him playing through the torn labrum. Like, there's a lot of drama going on around Baker Mayfield, a lot of noise. And Gojo, this is supposed to be a guy that's in a leadership position within your organization. He's one of the most public figures in the National Football League. And for a guy to be the face to create this much noise and have this much controversy, it's hard to imagine that Kevin Stefanski, their head coach, and Andrew Berry, their general manager, can have any degree of confidence that this guy can be an extension of the front office and the coaching staff moving forward for them. So when the production starts to slip the way that it did with Baker, it makes you question whether or not the juice is worth the squeeze, especially with all of the noise that their quarterback is seemingly creating.
Yeah, Chris, the production's not even the issue for me, though, because I can explain a lot of that away and say dude was injured in a way that we kind of forgot about. Like, he mentioned that during the large portion of the season, and we knew, but like you and I always talk about, once you get out there as a player, that gets forgotten pretty quick. You're out there, we expect you to perform. We can say that in the meantime, but when we look at it after the season, we know dude was playing hurt. It's just the fact that when that went wrong, Chris, it seemed to crack the foundation and all that goodwill that had been made up over the last year. Because we remember sophomore season, Baker, right? When Freddie Kitchens was in there and he was still that brash, outspoken guy. And when things didn't go as hot, it didn't look as good. We thought we had gotten away from that, but apparently we are right back in that same place.
Well, here's what I will say about the production, Gojo. We know he was affected by the injury. He doesn't get to use that as an excuse. I mean, him taking the podium after games, continuing to remind us that he's dealing with something, doesn't excuse away the poor performances. It doesn't excuse away the turnovers. It doesn't make the bad reads go away. And I think that's also a part of the math when it comes to whether or not Kevin Stefanski is sold on this guy being his future quarterback, not to mention the intangibles and being able to relate to your teammates and being able to galvanize the locker room in order to get the outcome that everybody is looking for. So there's a lot of these things that we're starting to look at Baker Mayfield and say, maybe this guy just is too selfish in order to be the franchise quarterback that the Cleveland Browns need him to be. And based on the response that we've seen from his teammates or the lack of support that we've seen from his teammates publicly, I'm starting to believe that that's the case. It feels like his act is wearing a little thin in Cleveland, and the organization is going to take steps to move on from him. That's what it seems like it's trending toward right now.
I think that's the interesting part, though, in all of this is we don't even have to get into supposing about anything, right? We have seen in at least two public instances Baker criticizing the offensive game plan of this team, which would be a direct reflection of his head coach, Kevin Stefanski, who's still the one calling the plays. Baker has mentioned in multiple interviews, yeah, there's been some things that have gone on behind the scenes that we need to repair and get better. This was all offered of his own accord here. But when we look at what Mary Kay Cabot actually reported, it's that Baker needs to repair these relationships inside if the Browns are going to keep him as the starting quarterback. Like, Baker's responding to the notion that he would be asking for a trade, but there's still, that's way down on the list. You got to scroll in this article to get to that point, because the rest of it is, do the Browns even want him as their quarterback last year? They picked up that fifth-year option, Chris. But we know, and I actually went back and looked it up, Chris, there is, I believe, no offset language in his contract.
Yeah, I didn't think there would be because he's the first overall pick. So it's ugly times ugly if you're the Cleveland Browns and you don't feel like this guy is the best option for your team in 2022. And let's look at the Cleveland Browns. This is a talented outfit. When you look at the skill position players that they have, the offensive line, how they've upgraded on all three levels of the defense this past offseason, this is a roster that's ready to go. Top to bottom, they're as deep as anybody in the NFL. They're just looking for a guy that can be a difference maker at the quarterback position. And even if they don't have a difference maker, somebody that doesn't detract from what they're doing by all the noise that they're creating around them. And I think that's the part where it makes it hard for Kevin Stefanski to justify trying to find a path forward or trying to be proactive about mending fences with Baker Mayfield. But that being said, you still got to deal with the $18.5 million cap hit that Baker Mayfield is going to account for and that the Cleveland Browns are on the hook for in 2022. I don't know how they find a way to work around it. I don't know what the quarterback's trade value ends up being this offseason, seeing as how he's having shoulder surgery. But this is a problem that the Cleveland Browns are going to have to figure out soon.
I will say this. I just went back and looked it up, and per reporting from Mary Kay Cabot way back in the day, it appears that Baker Mayfield's fully guaranteed deal does include offset language, oddly enough. So
okay.
If he were cut at some point in the next 4 years, he wouldn't be able to keep that balance of what the Browns owe him plus whatever he makes from a new team. Cabot reported back then that Mayfield and his family had urged his agents, Jack and Tom Mills, to accept that offset language so he wouldn't miss practice time heading into that rookie year. So something to keep in mind as we go forward. Coming up next, though, Baker and the Browns won't be breaking any records in week 18 of the NFL season. Should anyone be breaking records that we really take into account as we go forward? We'll answer that question after this word from Body Armor. Let Body Armor Light help you achieve your fitness goals this year. Body Armor Light's the low-calorie sports drink that's hydrating your active lifestyle. Great flavors, berry punch, coconut. It's got no artificial sweeteners, no sugar added, and only 20 calories per 16-ounce bottle. Athletes like Diana Taurasi, Donovan Mitchell, Megan Rapinoe, they all use Body Armor Light to stay hydrated. So why not give it a try? From now until April 30th, you buy $20 of any Body Armor product, you're going to earn $10 in fitness cash towards select fitness retailers nationwide. Learn more at bacommittofit.com. That's bacommittofit.com. What do we do with week 18 NFL records? Next on ESPN Radio.
Sports Radio, ESPN.
Hello, everybody. I'm Chris Berman, and welcome aboard to the ESPN Radio Network.
30 years and counting. This is ESPN Radio. This is ESPN Radio.
Canning Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to have to address a shocking development from our friends over at NFL Live. It is no surprise to anyone that Dan Orlovsky has come correct yet again with one of the worst food takes on God's green earth. But Marcus Spears has stunned us with an admission of some food he's got a blind spot for. We will get to that coming up. We are efforting the sound and the video right now to try and get this to you guys. But, Chris, this is interesting to me. Cooper Kupp brought this up the other day, the wide receiver for the Los Angeles Rams, who's on the cusp of setting a number of different receiving records down the home stretch of this season here. He has the chance to join the ranks of Jerry Rice, Sterling Sharp, and Steve Smith in some pretty incredible numbers as he leads the NFL right now with over 1,800 receiving yards, 15 touchdowns on 138 catches, with a chance to set the single-season receptions and receiving marks this year. But he mentioned it wouldn't feel right doing it in 17 games versus 16 games. How are we supposed to account for this now, as the records are certainly going to be skewed from here on out?
Yeah, that's a great question, Gojo. I don't know if we necessarily can, but it is a heck of an accomplishment to be able to make it through a 17-game regular season healthy. And so when it comes to the validity of the records that guys are going to be setting or breaking, I got to give them credit for just being able to go out there each and every Sunday and being available for their team and trying to help their team win. Like, that's an incredible accomplishment in and of itself. So I don't necessarily think it's being dismissive of the accomplishments of the players from yesteryear that did it in shorter seasons. But for me, I'm going to recognize the guys when they decide that they're going to break the records, even if it takes them an additional game to do it.
Yeah, that one's tough for me. So, again, the ones he's on the cusp of, those four names I mentioned, it would be for the Triple Crown, leading the league in receptions, yards, and touchdown at wide receiver during the season. He is right now 135 receiving yards behind Calvin Johnson's single-season record from 2012. He is 11 catches shy of tying Michael Thomas's record for single-season receptions set in 2019. And he even said, what those guys did in 16 games, it wouldn't seem right to, I don't know, for those to be broken in 17. It wouldn't hold the same weight to me as it does for guys that have done it in a 16-game season and accomplishments those guys had and the seasons they put together. Those are incredible things, incredible accomplishments. You kind of have to separate the two. And, Chris, I would tend to agree. Like, I think there's going to be a sort of dividing line. We see it in other sports when they talk about baseball in the modern era and things like that. It's going to have to be the 17 game era, unless we do some version of trying to go on per game stats, measuring this by snaps, doing it the way we quite frankly should do with most stats that we describe, whittling them down to what you're doing on averages across the season, as opposed to just taking volume stats anymore.
Gojo, I think the further we get removed from regular season expansion, the less people are going to be talking about this. Because I don't hear anybody griping that played in the 14-game regular season era talking about any of those records being broken by guys that played in the 16-game regular season era. And go on down through the history of the NFL, records are going to be broken if they continue to add games to the regular season. That's just the way it goes. But whoever ends up at the top of those single-season record books, like those records lists, like those are the people that we're going to acknowledge for having that individual record. So I don't necessarily know that it's going to be a thing or if we have to change the formula in terms of being able to evaluate the greatness of an individual season. I will just say this, like I think there's a way that the players that do break those records can pay homage to the ones that held the records in a shorter regular season. But again, when we start going to the per game basis, we do minimize the value or minimize the importance of being able to make it through a 17-game regular season. Because as you know, to try to make it through an NFL regular season is a war of attrition, and it's hard for players to stay healthy throughout the course of the entire year. Football is a collision sport. It's not a matter of if you're going to get hurt, it's a matter of when you get hurt. But the fact that a player can actually go out there and continue to be available for his team and in the lineup every single week, is a heck of an accomplishment. And I think having the opportunity to break those records because you do play that extra game, I think that has to be taken into consideration.
I think it does, and I think that's a worthwhile part of it. I'd be more than comfortable saying, hey, you put a minimum snap amount when you talk about these records if you're going to talk about breathing the same air as some of these guys, because you're absolutely right. Being able to stay healthy, while there is some randomness associated to certain injuries, a lot of it is how you take care of your body, being able to weather that war of attrition like you mentioned. So totally understand rewarding that. At the same time, I do kind of appreciate Cooper Kupp being the one to come out and say, hey, it is a little bit different, and it wouldn't feel right for me just saying outright. This is where I, again, Chris, I talked about this with some of the pandemic seasons that we had, particularly the NBA bubble. Putting an asterisk next to something is not a crime in my book. It's not saying it's lesser. It's saying it's different. It's a marker that, hey, things changed right now. I said we could have put an asterisk next to that bubble championship for the Lakers, just saying, hey, we had a whole gap in the middle of this damn season, and then we went and played this thing basically inside of Disney World. Same for this. It's saying, hey, the NFL, we went to 17 games from here on out here. This is marking and letting everybody know game got a little bit different after this one. I don't think there's any crime in that, because to me, an asterisk isn't a dirty thing. Major League Baseball has made it so with the steroid era, but I don't think in general it's got to be a bad thing.
No, I don't. I hear where you're coming from. I will just say this. The further we get removed from that Lakers championship that you're referring to, the less and less we talk about that actually being a bubble season, and the more we reflect on LeBron James getting his fourth championship. Like, that's what people remember from that. That's what it becomes about. So I don't necessarily know that people are going to continue to harp on this as we kind of become adjusted to a 17-game regular season. I just don't see that happening. I think when records get broken in the short term, I think people will discuss it. But when we start talking about the regular season 5 years from now, 7 years from now, I don't think it'll be that much of a factor. I just don't see it happening like that. And so for all of the guys that seem poised to break records in Week 18, like T.J. Watt, like Cooper Kupp, I don't necessarily know that it's one of those situations where we got to dismiss it or we got to put an asterisk by it, just because I think once we get removed from it and once we start reflecting on it, people are going to look at that season as just a heck of an accomplishment.
Yeah, so we have, you, as you mentioned there, things to look forward to here. Most sacks in a single season, T.J. Watt with the potential to break that one, currently held by Michael Strahan. Most interceptions in a season, the current record held by Dick Lane at 14. Trevon Diggs has a shot at potentially getting to that one. And Cooper Kupp, like we mentioned, has a chance to finish the season within shouting distance of the single season receiving yards and single season reception records, albeit in 17 games. Plenty more time to discuss that. But coming up next, if you thought this season was bad for the Giants and Jets already, might I suggest taking a look at a lawsuit that they now get to deal with next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll show everyone where Bruce Arians and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers went wrong in the dealing with Antonio Brown, as he is now officially released by the Buccaneers, no longer a part of that team, but the drama is only just getting started. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. But, Chris, we have learned a lot about a couple of our teammates today. Dan Orlovsky, as he is wont to do, took to Twitter yet again today with one of the worst food takes known to man. He was responding to another one of our great producers here at ESPN, Dominique, who works at ESPN in New York, and she brought up cannolis. She said, tweeted, quote, Dominique Collins said, current level of Italian, I just made myself a cannoli for breakfast. To which Dan Orlovsky responds, want to be honest here, respectfully, cannolis do not taste good, ever. Now, Chris, this is shocking enough. Like, we could just sit here and talk about this on his own, because once again, Dan has spit up all over himself, embarrassed himself in front of a national audience here. And as friends of his, I feel badly for him that he is so lost.
Well, listen, man, he's chosen this hill to die on with terrible food takes. And I will say that his opinion on cannolis seems like it's something that's on brand for him. So I expect nothing less from Dan Orlovsky. But we all know when he talks about going one way when it comes to food, you all need to run in the opposite direction. Like, it's clear that he doesn't know what he's talking about. Cannolis are magical goodness, all that gooiness in your mouth. It's something really, really special. And I think that Dan Orlovsky needs to relax on when it comes to what's a good dessert and what's not. Because the cannolis, I mean, they're outstanding, Gojo.
They're a perfect good. Chris, last weekend, I had pancake cannolis. Sweet, sweet cream filling in that ricotta wrapped around a soft, fluffy pancake. It was heaven on earth. It was a transformative experience. One of my favorite donuts is the cannoli donut. All of that.
I will admit this, though, Gojo.
Okay.
I did not know it was ricotta in the middle of cannoli. I didn't know what it was. I just knew it was good.
And you know what, Chris? That should be a great point here. A lot of people get thrown off by the ingredients. They find out the name of something that's in something, and they go, oh, I can't possibly eat that, when if you just tried it and took it in the form you're supposed to consume it in, you would love it. Because guess what? You're an adult, and you're not a picky toddler eating mushy peas anymore that your parents feed you. Grow up and be about that life. That being said, I didn't realize that today we were also going to learn this about our teammate Marcus Spears, because on NFL Live earlier today, it was Field Yates hosting alongside Dan Orlovsky, Marcus Spears, and Keyshawn Johnson, co-host Keyshawn, J1 Max. Check it out, 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday.
Nice plug, by the way.
Always stay plugging. They were all on NFL Live today, and as they brought this up, Field Yates attempted to throw a lifeline to hope that Marcus Spears would save him from Dan Orlovsky's bad take. This was the result.
So Dan Orlovsky, great on Twitter. Not so great with his food takes, as he says, quote, want to be honest here, and he puts the air quotes around this, respectfully, yeah. Cannolis do not taste good, ever. Swagoo, come correct with this man. No, what is he talking about?
Be my family right here.
Hey, brother, hold on 1 second. This is a cultural barrier. I don't know what cannolis are, fellas.
Swagoo.
Come on, Mark. You're embarrassing the 300-pounders, bruh. You got to know what cannolis are. We've been to too many good restaurants, too many fine dining experiences for you not to know what cannolis are, bruh. I'm telling you, you have had to see it on a menu before and know that when somebody orders it, what it actually looks like. I can't buy it, Swagoo. We're actually in Baltimore before. A lot of people in there that love cannoli. Like, there's no chance that I'm buying that Marcus Spears had no idea what a cannoli was.
See, Marcus Spears is going to be on the show with us tomorrow, so we're going to get to the bottom of this. Because, Chris, you're exactly right in this situation. My former co-host, Chinne Agwumike, used to always make jokes at my expense about seasoning, because as a member of the Caucasian community, we're not necessarily associated with seasoning our food as well as our counterparts. But I always said, I lived a lot of life above 300 pounds, which sort of mitigates that. I've been big for a long time, which means I've traveled the world and I've eaten so many great things, and I enjoy that because food matters to me. I thought that was going to be the same here. I did not realize there was some racial barrier that separated people from cannolis. I don't want to live in that world.
There's not, Gojo. Now, now here's the thing. I'm from the tri-state area, so maybe I might be exposed to something that not a lot of others have been. But I just feel like cannolis is one of those desserts that's universally known. Like, it's just kind of one of those things that everybody is aware of. And so the fact that Marcus Spears is not on board or not up on this particular pastry is a real surprise for me. I mean, the 300-pounders usually know where the good food is at, and Marcus not only knows where to find good food, but he actually can cook good food. If you don't know, Marcus Spears does his thing in the kitchen. So I'm surprised to hear bro talk about him not knowing what a cannoli is. That's a shock to the system.
And I'm disappointed because the part of that clip we didn't play was Keyshawn Johnson coming to explain. He came to bat and he tried to be a good friend and explain what cannolis were to Marcus Spears. But then he also poo-pooed cannolis and tried to knock Marcus off here. We got it tomorrow. Our job when Marcus Spears joins the show is to convince him that it is worth his time to go out here and try cannoli for himself. We don't want to bias the sample or anything like that. We just want to make sure he gives it a fair shot. Because you and I have both lived the cannoli life, and my oh my do we enjoy it. So I think we can do this for our friend.
Gojo, I think I need to take it a step further. Being a former teammate of his, I feel like I need to send a box of cannolis to his house. Like, I just need to find a local pastry and deliver it to him.
That, you know what? That seems like the way to go here, because that's going to be the Canny and Golic Jr. difference. We're going to go above and beyond Marcus Spears, Chris's former teammate, and our current teammate here at ESPN. We want to make sure that he is well taken care of, so we will address that at a later date. Coming up next, though, we will address all the drama going on in Tampa Bay with Antonio Brown and company next.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.